We are back on Dateline Washington. This is the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is Jim Copeland. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he joins us today to talk about the status of the Employee Free Choice Act, also known as Card Check. That is a major topic of debate on Capitol Hill and around the country. It's been back in the headlines in the past couple of days as Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter, a moderate Republican who had previously supported the idea, now says he'll vote against it in the next incarnation. And Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What is the significance of the Specter decision here in terms of either just the numbers or the message that that sends?
I think it's significant in both respects. First of all, Specter was the only Republican who had come out affirmatively in support of the Employee Free Choice Act. So the fact that Specter now has signaled his opposition means that the Republicans in the Senate could hold a filibuster and prevent a successful cloture vote and therefore block passage of the bill. So in that respect, just from a pure numbers game, it's highly significant. Even if there are no Democrat defectors, the Republicans could block the bill if they're all unanimously opposed to it. From a momentum standpoint, I think it's also a signal that senators are becoming a little bit edgy about what would really amount to a radical reconstruction of our labor law in the U.S. In the midst of this significant economic downturn, that the economic costs potentially from dramatically tying companies' hands vis-a-vis negotiation with unions is too high to be ignored.
Basically, the idea here is that right now, workers are sometimes approached to unionize. They sign a card to get the idea on a ballot, and then there's a secret ballot to determine whether or not the workers actually want to unionize. This legislation would basically say that signing the card is indication that you want the union, so there wouldn't even be a vote. How does that impact the workplace and just labor across the board?
Well, what it does is, I mean, it's hard to make a conceptual argument as to why you wouldn't want secret ballot elections, right? We have them here for a reason. You don't have secret ballots, say, in Congress, where you want to know what your representative's voting for, but the precise reason why you don't want to have open elections versus secret ballot elections for unions is you don't want intimidation or pressure to be brought to bear. You want people to actually vote their conscience on this, and that's why we have secret ballots generally. So today you can collect cards, and if you get 30% of the members of what's going to become a bargaining unit to say they want a union, then you hold a secret ballot election run by the National Labor Relations Board. And what this bill would do is really say, well, if you get a majority of the folks to sign a card, you automatically get a union without the secret ballot election, which leads to a lot of potential intimidation. It's also worth noting, and I can go into more detail about the other provisions in the act, that card check, while it's become synonymous with this bill, is far from the only provision and not necessarily even the most disturbing part of the Employee Free Choice Act.
Well, let's talk about another provision that you may be referring to there, and that's that in any sort of collective bargaining scenario, if it's a protracted labor standoff, the government actually comes in and dictates the terms of the next arrangement, correct?
Precisely. There's a compulsory arbitration provision where if after you form a union, the union comes together with the business, after 4 months they're not able to reach a decision, then there's a mandatory arbitration that's conducted. Now, unfortunately, the bill is not structured in how this arbitration is supposed to occur. It's really all left up to the Department of Labor to pick who the arbitrators are, what the scope of their analysis is going to be, and what they can actually determine. Effectively, the arbitrator's ruling is binding. There's no avenue for appeal. You can't go to a judge. You can't say this isn't fair. Effectively, whatever the arbitrators say, you have to live with for a minimum of 2 years under the statute. To a significant degree, you're basically having the government, the Department of Labor, and the political appointees there dictating the terms. We're not talking just wages. We're talking about the total terms of contract, wages, vacation hours. You could have constraints on firing decisions, on outsourcing decisions, on moving people, on vacation time, on even mergers and acquisitions for the company. All these things potentially could be under the scope scope of these arbitrators that are picked by government appointees. So it's deeply disturbing in the sense that you would, in some real respects, be moving the entire private sector, potentially, once they're unionized, into a more public sector model where these folks are much more like public employees are today.
Jim, unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for being with us and helping us understand the issue better.
Thanks for having me.
Jim Copeland is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. That does it for this edition of Dateline Washington, a presentation of Radio America. Thanks to executive producer Jim Roberts. Please check us out online, dateline.radioamerica.org. I'm Greg Corumbus. Please join me next time for Dateline Washington.